tardes, les saluda Jenny Badura, Evangelio tiene el día libre y gracias por acompañarnos. Una disputa entre dos guardias de seguridad que trabajan para la planta de tratamiento.
Jasmine.
Hi, Jasmine. Does it come on yet?
Okay, I'm gonna mute.
Okay. Oh, excuse me. Excuse me again.
Good evening.
Hello. Good evening.
How are you? I'm running a little late, so I'm going to be about 5 more minutes.
Okay, well, I have my 2 grandsons and his new bride. They're coming around oh, in about 20 minutes, we're here for a funeral, and then they've got to get back to New Orleans. So when they come, I'll probably have to get off. Jasmine is on as well. Yep. So.
Okay.
Malka?
Malka, I'm running a few minutes late, so I'll probably start around 6:15, and I understand Anna's going to have to get off, so just letting you know.
6:15? All right. Okay, thank you.
Now for us,
thank
that's
you.
Just...
Bye-bye.
Now, it's 5 over here. You mean 5:15 for us?
Correct. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I'll be back in a few minutes.
Okay, Malka, I'm
bye
waiting.
Bye.
My grandsons are coming in, and they were here for a funeral. And in about 20 minutes, they're going to be here. So, and I have to get back to New Orleans tonight. So
okay.
I can't stay on very long. So.
Okay. Well, I'm going to hang up and get back on.
Okay, I will too. Jasmine's on, so at least there'll be two of you, and he'll do the recording, and I'll try to listen to the recording. If he's not sure where we are, it's Chapter 11, Section 7.
Okay.
Okay, all right.
Thank you. All right.
Okay, bye-bye.
Because I love my son, it's a different week that this will happen to our family. Next question, why?
For son, Howell Donaldson, senior shackled by the wrist and ankle. The neighborhood over 6 weeks. Police say he killed 4 random people within blocks of each other. His parents can't believe it.
He doesn't have the personality.
Investigators say a tip from a former co-worker helped them link this grainy video and the murder weapon to Donaldson.
And on this, one of Donaldson's former co-workers at a local McDonald's will receive a $110,000 cash reward after alerting police to a gun he brought to the restaurant. Donaldson is scheduled to be in court on Tuesday. Tom?
Adrian Baker for a statement. Thank you. Next tonight, new developments in the case of that former Stanford swimmer convicted of sexually assaulting a young woman outside of a fraternity party. Brock Turner's legal team now asking for a new trial, saying what happened between the two was not a crime. Here's ABC's Marcy Gonzalez.
Tonight, Brock Turner, whose 6-month sentence for sexually assaulting an unconscious woman sparked outrage across the country, is appealing his conviction.
She was
of the three convictions. Dane Turner, who maintained the encounter was consensual, did not get a fair trial.
He did not know her. Took her behind a dumpster.
The district attorney argued the then 22-year-old victim referred to as Emily Doe was intoxicated when then 19-year-old Turner sexually assaulted her after a frat party in 2015. Two students who say they witnessed Turner on top of the woman testified that they chased him away. The victim read a powerful statement in court that went viral, in part telling Turner, "You tried unyieldingly to save yourself, your reputation, at my expense." Tonight, the district attorney telling ABC News, Turner received a fair trial and was justly convicted. Nothing can ever hold back Emily Doe's legacy of raising the world's awareness about sexual assault. The judge who issued Turner's controversial sentence is still facing backlash, but if this appeal is granted, it will be presided over by a different judge.
Marcy Gonzalez, those new developments. Marcy, thank you. Let's move on now to weather. After a mild November, winter weather is officially upon us. Here's the snow we've seen in Washington State. The front edge of a system now sweeping across the Rockies that will send temperatures plummeting as it moves east. Let's get right to ABC senior meteorologist Rob Marciano, who's tracking the cold last night. Hey, Rob.
Hey, Tom, it has been mild, especially across the eastern half of the country. 10 to 20 degrees above average, but huge changes are on the way. We begin with the blizzard warnings that are posted for the upper Midwest. Take a look at this. Coming out of the Rockies, you saw snow in Washington State. We'll continue to dump snow across the plains tomorrow morning, Rapid City, then Fargo, just outside of Minneapolis. Not too much, 3 to 6 inches, but it'll be blown around by the wind. Storms that ahead of that. The big story is going to be the cold, though, from temperatures in the 50s to feeling like 5 in Minneapolis Tuesday morning, and 15 degrees in Denver. Similar wind chills by Thursday with a reinforcing shot to the northeast next weekend. Down.
All right, we'll get right to that winter blast. Rob, thanks. As Americans buckle up to face the cold, another seasonal foe already doing damage. Some officials warning this flu season could be severe. With the flu shot, how much help? ABC's Maggie Rooley with the health alert.
Tonight, a new flu warning. Doctors fearing the virus is getting faster, with cases already spiking in some regions. CDC reporting Louisiana, Mississippi, and South Carolina already showing high levels of flu activity compared to zero states this time last year. Another concern, the National Institutes of Health warning this season's vaccine may only be 10% effective against this severe strain of the flu. A grim reality for the family of Alana Marietta.
Never in a million years would we have thought that we would have lost her that day like this.
Her family says the 20-year-old mother of two was perfectly healthy until she got the flu last week.
Influenza is not at all anything like a bad cold, that people are hospitalized, lose weeks of work, and die of complications of influenza.
The CDC is reporting hundreds of new flu cases every week, and officials fear these numbers are only going to keep increasing through the holidays.
Maggie, thank you. And there's still much more ahead of World News Tonight this Sunday. The consumer alert. Parents on the hunt for one of the season's hottest toys need to pay special attention. And what we're learning tonight about the explosion in fun blocking in this quiet neighborhood. The suspected package, they take a look at this, confirmed by a hero named the dramatic encounter captured on surveillance. What happened next? Stay with us.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Malka, you know where we're starting? I believe it's
chapter
11. Rapa.
Yeah, 7:11:7, I think.
Chapter 11, section 6.
I think so. Either 6 or 7, I can't remember.
I believe it's 6.
Okay.
It's titled Teamwork.
Okay. Hanok, can you tell me where we're going to start at?
Yeah, if you go to the Revealed Wisdom Matrix, row 11, the second column from the left, there's some background noise.
Yeah, it's me. Okay.
row 11, the second column from the left, when you open up that page, scroll down to, I think it's class 14. And it will open up to teamwork, chapter 11, section 6.
Seven. Seven.
We're starting with section 7?
Yes.
Okay, did we do section 6 last time?
We did 6, and then we had 2 weeks of the general in particular.
Okay.
And so now we're back to 11:7. Chapter 11, 7.
We finished the Idra Rabbah, the 2 verses in Idra Rabbah?
Yes, we did.
Okay, I forgot.
I think at the last minute we decided to go ahead and do it because it was only 2 verses.
Okay.
And so we finished it so we could get back on track to the Yeshem pages.
So we're in chapter 11, section 7. And for Jasmine, just scroll down from where it opens up in section 6. Scroll down till it gets to section 7, which is titled General Rectification and Blemish. And I will start to read from there. But I'll start with the L'shem Yichud. L'shem Yichud Kudsha Barichu Ishkin David Hilu Urchimu Udhilu Udhilu Urchimu Reakta L'shem Yotei Bavavhe B'yichuda Shalim B'shem Kol Yisrael Limud Torah Mitzvah La'asok Torah Mitzvah Vayihino Amadimai Elohino Alinu Maasei Adenu Kununei Alinu Maasei Adenu Kununeihu. Tikkun for the nefesh is accomplished through the performance of positive mitzvot, and blemish of the nefesh is caused by transgression. But for the ruach, the emphasis is on occupation with the Torah and its study. My commentary. This comment should have been written earlier. I need to explain about Torah study and being busy with the Torah. These are 2 different positive mitzvot. Torah study is somewhat self-explanatory. Being busy with the Torah means to live as an example of Torah. The truth is, these words do not do justice to the actual experience of being busy with the Torah. We will now explain rectification and blemish in detail. We will begin with the rectification of nefesh, that is from the world of Asiyah, which is the lowest of all of them, and enters into a person first at the time of birth. You already know that no higher portion can enter until the lower part completes its tikkun. First, all the parts of the nefesh, that is from Asiyah, must enter and complete their tikkun. Afterwards, the parts of the ruach, that is from Yetzirah, can begin to enter within him. When they are completed, then the neshama, that is from Briah, will begin to enter until everything is finished. However, there are conditions and distinctions concerning all this, as will be explained in this, the 8th gate, called the Gate of Reincarnations. It seems that this general introduction ought to appear at the beginning of the book. However, keep in mind what Reb Shmuel, the son of Rabbi Chaim Vital, the editor and redactor of the 8 gates, wrote in the beginning of this chapter. This chapter is a sort of abridgment of the entire subject of Gilgulim. Therefore, it makes sense that this introduction appears here. I'd also like to expand, but it's an unwritten commentary. As you read, the first few paragraphs in the bold type, if there's a hint in the wording that indicates that, as an example, let's say the left arm has completed its tikkun at the level of the nefesh, but the right arm has not yet completed its tikkun at the level of the nefesh. Does that mean that the left arm has to wait? But as we've just read before and studied before, the left arm will come up, go up one night after it's completed its tikkun, and not come back down. There'll be another left arm from another sister soul, another soul that is part of the same root from Adam. And when that left arm comes down, it's not the same person. It has begun to be a different person. And there's a hint in this that it's possible that the ruach of the left arm may have come down, but the right arm is still at the level of the nefesh. How does that work? It is something we can explain later. But it's important to understand that every person and living today, or most of the people living today, are composites of different souls' parts, some that have completed their tikkun and have become the ruachs, or some that have completed the ruach and have become the neshamot, while others may still be at the level of the nefesh. And that's how you can have a person who is doing really good deeds, studying lots of Torah, and yet still be doing inappropriate things in another sefirah, another level, in another body part. And this is why it is so difficult for people to understand the truth of these rules of reincarnation, and the difficulty in understanding the system, the way it works. Because from our perception, we always speak in terms of a person, not the body parts of that person. And that affects our consciousness and our ability to understand all of the truths that we are learning. So, I'm starting to read where it says, occupation with Torah requires ruach. Nevertheless, it is also worthwhile to keep in mind an important rule concerning all Torah knowledge. Subjects, descriptions, and stories of the Torah are not necessarily presented in a chronological or a logical order. Events that occur at a later time may very well appear before the presentation of other events or descriptions that precede them. Similarly, sometimes what you need to know first to understand the beginning will not appear until later. This is because the Torah is an open or infinite system. If such a combination of words is permissible. And as an unwritten commentary in our last questions and answers series, I believe it was this last Wednesday, Jasmine asked a question to expand upon what I had said earlier about how the Talmud and the Zohar do not follow a logical order. And this paragraph is just adding an additional dimension in the sense of time, that it is very possible for someone to have to reincarnate in a different frame, because that's what that body part needs, while the rest of the body parts need to wait until it is their appropriate time to make their tikkun. Continuing to read. The tikkun of a person who merits to the nefesh of asiyah is through the performance of positive mitzvot, whose total number is 248. Blemish is a result of positive mitzvot that were not fulfilled, or because of transgression of one of the 365 negative mitzvot. Blemish caused by one of the positive mitzvot that was not fulfilled applies when both the opportunity and the obligation were present, but he transgressed and did not do what was incumbent upon him to do. In the next section, the Ari will discuss mitzvot where the opportunity or the obligation were not present. Occupation with Torah acquires ruach, that is from Yetzirah, as will be explained. This statement is somewhat problematic and needs to be understood by broadening our conceptual categories. The B'nai Aharon has also pointed this out. For example, if occupation with Torah alone rectifies the ruach, then a person who is working on his ruach should be exempt from the active performance of all the other mitzvot. To answer this problem, consider the following. It is the teaching of the Ari in Etz Chaim, but the words quoted are those of the B'nai Aharon. All practical mitzvot, like tzitzit, tefillin, eating matzah, sukkah, etc., rectify the external partsuf. Mitzvot that are performed through speech, such as prayer and occupation with Torah, rectify the internal partsuf. The external partsuf is a partsuf just like the internal partsuf. It too has vessels and light or mochin. The two are equivalent and parallel. The only difference between them is one is external and the other is internal. Relative to each other, they are equivalent to nefesh being external and the ruach internal, relative to each other. Thus, on every level, there are the external and internal aspects, or what can be called the nefesh and ruach of that level. The nefesh, the external partsuf of any level, is rectified by the performance of practical mitzvot, whereas the ruach, the internal partsuf, is rectified by the mitzvot pertaining to speech and thought. This language, my commentary, this language is confusing. Hopefully it will be clarified in the next sections. One studies Torah while one rectifies their nefesh. Yet here we are being told that Torah study rectifies the ruach, and the ruach cannot come into the body until the nefesh is fully corrected. Is this Torah study an illusion and waste of time? Chas v'shalom. Also, the ruach is external relative to the neshama. How does this impact the idea of Torah study correcting the ruach? But I've already given you a hint, at the least, if not an explanation, in what I've my commentary is earlier in this class, because it is possible that a body part could be still at the left level of the nefesh, while another body part is at the left level of the ruach. And a third body part is at the level of the neshama. And in these terms of which is the internal and which is the external, and how do they interact with each other, takes some contemplation. But once that is contemplated, things become very clear and this section becomes understandable. Whereas when I wrote this commentary, I had not yet come to understand what I've just explained. That is the end of section 7 and the end of page 19. So to go ahead, we will need to go to back to the landing page and go to class number 15, which will open up handout number 20. Well, we will start with chapter 11, section 8, the categories of positive mitzvot. But before I do that, are there any questions on section 7? I assume somebody was still there, so I'll continue to read. Categories of positive mitzvot, chapter 11, section 8. There are five categories of positive mitzvot with some additional subsections, and each one has a different law concerning the requirement of Gilgul when a person does not perform one of the mitzvot from that category. The 248 positive mitzvot are divided into five categories and additional subsections. In this section, we explain four of the five categories. Because of the length of the explanation, description of the fifth category, which is one particular mitzvah, will be left until the next section. The accompanying table will make understanding of this section easier. The numbers in parentheses refer to it. A person must perform all the 613 mitzvot. If he is missing even one of them, then his nefesh is deficient by the amount of the mitzvah that is missing. However, the 248 positive mitzvot are divided into five categories. Number one, first there are mitzvot that may be impossible for him to do, such as the mitzvot that pertain to the time when the Holy Temple was existing. An example of these are sacrifices. For these, a person does not return in Gilgul to fulfill them. What advantage would there be in reincarnating in a period where the temple does not exist? Even when he returns in Gilgul, he would still not be able to perform them. However, when the Holy Temple is rebuilt, then he will be able to fulfill them. When the Holy Temple is rebuilt, then he can return in Gilgul to do them. My commentary. The statements above leave the question to reconcile the statement of the sages. Prayer and study of the sacrifices replace the actual action of doing a sacrifice in the temple, since the temple does not exist in our generation. My attempt at reconciling these two teachings that seem to be in conflict is to think that each of the resurrected bodies will need to go to the temple and do one sacrifice. This one sacrifice will manifest all of the prayer and study that they have done in that lifetime represented by the body involved. In effect, while the temple does not exist, the study and prayer replace it for the time being of that lifetime. When the third temple is built in the physical world, an action of an animal or other type of sacrifice will be necessary to manifest the study for that newly resurrected body. In effect, the study applies to the soul, but not the body. This body requires the physical action, since it is a physical being. And I hope that is helpful and makes things clear to you. Section 2. Second, there are those mitzvot that he can perform, such as tzitzit, tefillin, and the like. If he does not do them, then he must necessarily return to reincarnate, even many times, until he fulfills all of them. Because of his refusal, he has also blemished his soul, which requires extra purification. It is important to note that the Ari is not talking here about a person who could have done any of these mitzvot, but refused to do them. Such a person was discussed in the last section. Because of his refusal, he must not only reincarnate to do the mitzvot that he is missing, but he has also blemished his soul, which requires extra purification. In contrast, throughout this section, we are dealing with people who did not perform mitzvot because they were not able to do so. In Jewish law, a person who is prevented by overpowering circumstances from fulfilling a mitzvah is called anus, someone who is coerced. Thus, the second category includes people who did not do mitzvot, such as tzitzit or tefillin, because they were prevented as an anus from doing so. They must reincarnate to complete what is missing to them or for them. In addition, there are different gradations of anus. The mitzvot of the first category, those pertaining to the service in the Holy Temple, are entirely impossible of performance during our days. Concerning them, an individual Gilgul is totally anus. It is the exact opposite with mitzvot of the second category. They are least likely to be impeded by overriding circumstances of coercion, of anus. Throughout the rest of this section, we will be dealing with milder degrees of anus. My commentary. Here is a chart that is part of the commentary from the commentator Shabtai Tsecher. In my opinion, there is significant information provided about the mitzvot from this chart. Please review it, and I will comment about it below. I am presenting the chart as it is presented in the Kabbalah Online website. The website presents the mitzvah categories out of order. One possible reason for this has to do with the relationship of these categories to the worlds. The order they are presented is actually related to the degree of the anus. So we have category one, which is impossible to do, and category four is not up to the person to attain. Category 3A, not obligated to run after them, but he did run after them, but he did not attain them. And there are examples of the mitzvot. Category 3, not obligated to run after them. Category 4A, circumstances presented, the person did not do them. And Category 2, they're possible to do. Now, continuing my commentary, I will give you another minute or so just to review the chart, because it is helpful. And I recommend that you return to the chart until you're really clear on what it's saying. Continuing my commentary, please remember that the mitzvot are being numbered and eventually separated by man. The mitzvot are not separated. They are a unified whole, as they are all connections to Hashem. Mankind perceives the world separated. Hashem perceives the unity. The tzaddikim perceive the unity. This is primarily what separates a tzaddik from the rest of mankind. Let me rephrase this. Rephrase that. The tzaddik is not separated from the rest of mankind. He does not perceive himself separated from the rest of mankind. But the other people, the rest of mankind, do see him as something special, something separated. The five categories that the Ari teaches relate to the five worlds. These levels of reincarnation also relate to the seven Noahide mitzvot. The seven Noahide mitzvot encompass the majority of the 613 mitzvot, except for the laws of sacrifice and the laws of the Jewish king. Here is a list of the Noahide laws: the prohibition against idolatry, the prohibition of murder, the prohibition of theft, the prohibition of sexual immorality, the prohibition of blasphemy, the prohibition of eating flesh taken from an animal while it is still alive, and the seven, the requirement of maintaining courts to provide legal recourse. So I am duplicating the chart with changes I think will help explain things better. Remember, this is my opinion. It does not mean it is correct. So I added the two extra columns, the degree of coercion and the Noahide category. And I think the important thing is to go through the two columns. So the degree of coercion is high in the category one, the impossible to do, because it's, you can't do it, it's high coercion. And there is no specific application to the Noahide, and one way to realize that is that six of the seven Noahide laws are do not do mitzvot, whereas the categories in the chart are primarily associated with positive mitzvot. Category 4, because of the society in the West, we can consider that the coercion is there, but it would be, in my opinion, a low level of coercion. And you can look at what are the possible examples of Category 4. Now, when it comes to 3A, the mitzvah is not obligated to do them, but they will run after them. But they don't attain them. And that is depends on the society that people are in. And these are relating to the Noahide 2, 3, and 6. But how can that be? So let's go look at what 2, 3, and 6 are and see if we can reconcile that. 2, 3, murder and theft, and 6 is literally, we'll say it's the rules of kashrut. So we have the prohibition of eating flesh taken from an animal by it is still alive. But there's also laws of kashrut that are positive mitzvot that fall under that. And the same thing in the idea of the prohibition of theft. What would be a positive mitzvot that would come under that category? Since I can't think of one right now, I'll let you think of it. And eventually we'll come to some understanding on that. Category 3, you're not obligated to run after them. And it will depend on the society that you reincarnate into.
Hanok, I have a question.
Go ahead, Jasmine.
I don't understand what it means.
Can you close the door to the background noise?
Yeah, it's my mother. It's watching TV. But hold on. One thing. I don't understand not obligated to run after them.
Look at the mitzvah. The mitzvah is tithing. Are you obligated to do tithing if you have debts? It's a question that you may not know the answer to. So the answer is, if you owe debts, I'm not talking about monthly credit card statements. That would not be considered a debt. But if you owe somebody some money, are you obligated to make a contribution or do a tithing? And the answer is no, not until the debt is paid. But if you run after it, meaning you make the tithing, that should allow you to pay the debt. You should have see funds flow into your through you from Hashem so that you can pay off your debt and tithe. That's what the meaning of not obligated to run after them is. I hope that's helpful.
Also, I don't understand what Hakan and Ma'ake and Shiluah.
These are names of mitzvot that I forget their meaning also right now. But I'll take a look at them. They're different levels of, or different categories, or different specific mitzvot is what they are. And I'd have to look them up. I forget where they are. This is the chart that came from the website. So I just took those words. I didn't try and explain them. I'd have to look at what the words actually mean. So right now I'm not going to do that. The words that I did know, I did give you explanations for. So perhaps by Wednesdays I'll be able to answer that question, or if not next week, I'll try and find some time to take a look at that for you. So I'm going to drop below the chart. Now we go back to the case of the second category where a person did not do mitzvot, such as tzitzit or tefillin, and he must reincarnate in order to fulfill the missing mitzvot. In this Gilgul, to fulfill missing mitzvot, for someone who has already reincarnated and performed some mitzvah, it is insufficient that he fulfills those mitzvot that are missing to him, which he has never fulfilled at all. However, a person who reincarnates for this reason can sin or bring about other transgressions. Third, there are those mitzvot that he is not obligated to perform unless the circumstances of the mitzvah come to him. Examples are the truma, being able to make a donation, tithing, and shiluach hakan is to send away the mother bird prior to taking the eggs. So now you have one explanation of the two items that were missing. He must necessarily reincarnate to fulfill them. Shiluach Hakan is the mitzvah of chasing away the mother bird before a person takes for himself the pigeons or the eggs that are in the nest. This mitzvah is only applicable when he comes across that nest unexpectedly. If he knows the nest with pigeons or eggs is there and he goes to it, then the mitzvah does not apply. It only applies if he happens upon it. My commentary. In my personal experience, my neighbor watched a bird build a nest under his house overhang. He waited until the bird laid the eggs and then sent the bird away and took the eggs. In the Torah, it is promised a long life for the person who performs this mitzvah. In the Talmud, there is a story about a man who saw his friend, who honored his father as one of his attributes, performed this mitzvah, and then he fell off the ladder to his death. The sages explain that this mitzvah opportunity is given only to people who have the opportunity to receive long life in the world that is coming. He was only doing this mitzvah because his father told him to do it. The mitzvah belonged to him, not to his father. When he became an effect of his father, he lost the opportunity for this mitzvah to manifest as long life in this particular lifetime. The mitzvah of truma is the giving of 1% of the agricultural produce in the land of Israel to support the priests. According to one rabbinical opinion, this mitzvah and the mitzvah of tithing apply in our times. Thank you. You have a good week. I'll see you on Wednesday. Even according to the alternative opinions, many hold that when the majority of the Jewish people live in the land of Israel, then this mitzvah will not be applicable once again. However, this is only relevant if a person grows agricultural produce in the land of Israel. If he doesn't, then the circumstances of the mitzvah do not apply to him, and he is not required to run out and become a farmer in the land of Israel, although in these days he could do that more easily than in previous times. I hope that's helping to clarify things for you, Jasmine. My commentary. Tithing is one of the principal tools that I teach as a tool of Kabbalah. I have an ex-student who accepted the principle of tithing. She did this for over 2 years, month in and month out. She would tell people how her life changed after following this principle. She is a woman of 60 who was married twice. She had a great desire to fulfill her life through being married again. Then she met a man who studied the Talmud and the Torah as a literal teacher. He told her this rabbinical teaching from the Talmud, that tithing only applies to agriculture and only in the land of Israel. It is too early to see the physical effect, since it has not been 2 years. My intuition says that she will find that tithing applies to all items, including time, children, as well as money and agricultural items. One should also know that the second interpretation above applies now, since the number of halakhically Jewish people are now in the majority in the land of Israel. Please do not stop tithing, as we all are now obligated to tithe again, even before the temple is revealed. As it shows in the chart, when we do not tithe, we will need to reincarnate. Yes, it seems we will not suffer any sins, but we do not know that our experiencing discomfort from our actions still is part of the experiencing of this reincarnation. He is not obligated to run after them, but he must necessarily reincarnate to fulfill them. In the first category are the mitzvot that he could not perform at this time. Hopefully, wasn't too long that I was away. In the first category are mitzvot that he could not perform at this time under any circumstances. In the second category are mitzvot that the circumstances are right for the performance of the mitzvah, but he was prevented from doing it for some other reason. In this, the third category are mitzvot that he could perform if the circumstances are right, and if they are, then he must perform them. However, the circumstances never present themselves, and the halakha does not require him to run after them, to roam the fields until he comes upon a mother bird and her nest, as an example, or to cross the ocean to buy land in Israel. Another example. To become a farmer in order to give truma and other aspects of tithing. However, if he has not performed them in a previous Gilgul, or in this one, then he must reincarnate in a new Gilgul in order to fulfill them. However, since he needs to reincarnate only for this reason, to fulfill this mitzvah, then he is assured that he will not sin in the second Gilgul. And I am adding the next Gilgul, not the second. It would be any number of Gilgulim. Since he needs to reincarnate only to fulfill a mitzvah of the third category, then he is assured that he will not sin. And I am adding, yet he will experience feelings of possible remorse as he works to become a tzaddik through his Torah study and his cheshbon ha-nefesh, his calculations. This is his evaluating his actions each day. The fourth category. The fourth category consists of those mitzvot that he cannot do unless God forcibly puts him in a position to do one of them. Examples are redemption of the firstborn son, the yibum, the chalitza. If the circumstances of the mitzvah are presented to him, but he does not do them, then he must necessarily reincarnate. In this category are mitzvot that he cannot perform, even if he would run after them. There is no guarantee that he will attain the circumstances of the mitzvah by running after them, because it is not entirely up to him. For example, even if he were to marry one woman after another, there is no guarantee that any one of them would give birth to a firstborn son. Similarly, if his brother dies without leaving progeny in the world, he can perform either the mitzvah of Yibum or the mitzvah of Chalitza. He cannot perform both. Furthermore, this category includes mitzvot whose circumstances no one wants to attain, or whose circumstances people normally run away from rather than towards it, like the death of his brother. And this will be clear in the Ari's next example as well. Another example of a mitzvah from the fourth category is giving a bill of divorce. He is not obligated to divorce his wife unless he dislikes her, as everyone knows. Even then, it is hard to divorce, and the altar sheds tears. According to the words of the Ari here, a person who dislikes his wife should divorce her and not transgress the mitzvah of love your neighbor like yourself. There are rabbinical opinions, however, that a person should not divorce his wife for any reason except adultery. Neither are situations that people pursue or have any desire to attain. Furthermore, even if a person has no great love for his wife, it is still hard to divorce because of children or other reasons. Finally, it has been taught that the altar sheds tears when a man divorces the bride of his youth. We may learn from here that the circumstances of divorce are no great boon to the well-being of the universe. The altar makes peace between God and humanity, and it laments the lack of peace among the divorcing couple. Although divorce by giving a bill of divorce is a mitzvah of the Torah when necessary, it is nevertheless not a situation that people seek out or pursue, except, and this is an unwritten commentary, there are certain groups of Hasidic Orthodox people who might be living with the same woman for 30 or 40, 50 years, and at this time in their life, as they approach the end, they divorce her so as to do the mitzvah and then a few months later remarry that same woman. This is the idea of somebody running after it, and maybe they attain it, the mitzvah, maybe they do not, by remarrying her, by giving her a divorce. Continuing to read. There is a distinction concerning these mitzvot and those like them. He does not return to reincarnate if the opportunity to do one of them has not presented itself. He will merely come as an ibur temporarily until it is fulfilled, and then he will depart immediately. Category 4a. However, if the circumstances of the mitzvah are presented to him, but he does not do them, then he must reincarnate. If the circumstances of the mitzvah are present, but he does not do them because of some other reason that prevents him, then he must reincarnate. In this case, I do not remember what my master, the Arizal, said, whether he is guaranteed not to sin, as in the third category, or not. Since he was not obligated in the first place to run after the mitzvah, as in the third category, then the law concerning him is like the law of the third category. In that case, he would be guaranteed not to sin in his second Gilgul. Or alternatively, since the mitzvah was before him, unlike the third category, but like the second category, and he did not do it, then the law pertaining to him will be Gilgul, like the second category, where there is no guarantee not to sin. Section 3a. I am also in doubt concerning other mitzvot, especially those where a person is not obligated to run after them, such as Ma'akeh or the Shiluach HaKan. The mitzvah of Ma'akeh is the mitzvah to the owner of a house to build a fence around the roof in order that someone on the roof will not fall off. So now you have the other category, Jasmine. When you build a new house, you shall make a fence around your roof and do not bring blood into your house if someone falls from there. Like Shiluach HaKan, it is one of the mitzvot of the third category, where a person is not obligated to run after it. In this case, he is not obligated to go buy a house just to put a fence around the roof. What is the law if a person ran to do them but did not succeed? For example, he was poor and could not buy a house to build a fence. In this case, he is more of an anus. He was more coerced than in the previous examples of the third category. In those examples, he did not run after the mitzvah to try to do it. Here he did, but still he did not achieve the circumstances to enable him to perform it. Do we say that he is called an anus and the bur is sufficient for him? Or does he need an actual Gilgul? In this case, is he like a person who does not do a mitzvah of the fourth category because the full circumstances of the mitzvah never presented themselves? He is like a person who never had a firstborn son to redeem. This is a high level of anus. He does not need to return in a full-fledged Gilgul, but it is sufficient for him to come as an ibur and fulfill the mitzvah in that way. Or alternatively, since the mitzvah that is missing is from the third category, then its judgment remains as one from the third category, and he must return in Gilgul. But he is guaranteed not to sin. In another place we wrote that it appears that he is exempt from Gilgul, and Ibur is enough for him. On the other hand, it is possible that he does reincarnate. But God arranges that the circumstances to do the mitzvah are definitely given to him. My commentary. There's a lot of valuable information in this section. It is hard to absorb all of the information. I am going to attempt to simplify the commentary so that it can be understood easily. One of the five categories is not included in this section. The highest level category can no longer be done in the physical world by anyone. The internal aspect of this mitzvah can be studied by the soul. When the body is resurrected, the body will need to do the action again one more time. The soul, due to its study, will have the right consciousness. Therefore, the action will be complete internally and externally. The second category is possible to do, but it may not be done every day. If one misses a day in a lifetime, it is not considered complete. The Heavenly Academy determines if the reincarnation that is required also includes the possibility of falling spiritually through making mistakes, or if the reincarnation is limited to the specific missing mitzvah and no other mistakes will impact the person. Of course, being in this physical world will cause someone studying Torah to feel from their mistakes as they do their cheshbon ha-nefesh each night. Cheshbon ha-nefesh is calculating and evaluating our actions from the day. This is a technique used by the students of Musar and others who are choosing to become a tzaddik. There will be no consequences from their mistakes, except their own attributes and self-deprecation if they strive to improve. The third category are mitzvot that can be done, but there may not be able to do due to the circumstances of this life. The result is that they may become an ebur or may reincarnate, but will not suffer any negative impacts from their mistakes during this lifetime. The fourth category are mitzvot that can be performed unless circumstances allow for it. An example is a pinyon aben, the redemption of the firstborn son. The person cannot control if his wife has a firstborn son, and while he may divorce her for not having his firstborn son, this usually does not happen. Even if he divorces 100 women, there is no guarantee that any one of them will have a firstborn son. This soul must reincarnate in order to perform the mitzvah, but is not affected by any mistakes it makes while in this reincarnated body. In my opinion, these spiritual laws truly demonstrate Hashem's love for us. That is the end of section 8. And we are out of time for our class, even though we started late. We've done the full time. So are there any questions? Class is tomorrow. There will be one at 4:30, a mini Zohar class, and that's West Coast time. And 7 o'clock, an essay by Rabbi Ashlag. That is also West Coast time. Any questions? Shalom to all.